Siren Radio.
And the weather today, highs of 22 degrees centigrade, lows of 12 degrees centigrade, and it's going to be a day of sunny intervals with a nice gentle breeze. So, that's good news.
Putting together an audio show which entertains and educates the globe is a piece of cake. When you've got the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition teams on the case for Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk.
I keep on going, yes, I'll never.
really, we're approaching a time in Yorkshire and Lincolnshire, indeed in the whole wonderful United Kingdom, whereby school holidays are approaching and it's the holiday season. And what we're going to do with respect to that? Well, who better than to discuss some of the findings of Europcar and ABTA and a variety of things, and indeed provide some very sage words of wisdom and advice than ace British comedian, general wonderful author, president of the British Humanist Association. She's basically a Renaissance woman, let's face it. It's Shappi Khorsandi. How are you, Shappi?
I'm very well. How are you?
Excellent. Particularly amused by your statement recently that when watching England in the World Cup finals recently, you almost said naughty words in front of your children. That was very good indeed.
I think it's very polite of you to say almost. Well, I did. They learnt some choice new words.
Okay. Well, let's move on from that, because it's clearly when we're into the holiday season, tensions can begin to rise. I was fascinated by this survey to find that 55% of people actually take their tea bags with them when they go travelling. And effectively, the first family argument usually occurs after 68 miles, or kilometres, if you like.
I don't know who these families are that aren't arguing within the first mile. I'd like some tips.
Because clearly, I mean, making it through that first 60, 68 miles and so on seems, you know, a possible sort of line from that. But is it a case of tension? Because you're obviously looking to satisfy a number of egos there, a number of desires. Is it the psychology of the whole situation? Is it the long distance? Is it the sense that, oh, we're going to do this, excitement's building up to fever pitch level, so actually we should all learn from Gareth Southgate and actually just calm down.
Calm down, wear a waistcoat and calm down. I think the arguments probably start from children who get frustrated being cooped up and strapped into a car. And, you know, it's very, very tricky to entertain them all the way. There's only so many rounds of make-up words from that car's registration plate. Did you do that?
Well, I suppose I Spy was around, and at a time there's sort of a moment when I can actually go for that. But of course, you've got so many other computer devices and things that can work through that. I would have thought there are ways in which you can divert.
Oh, no, we can't have computers in the car, because my daughter gets really car sick. So if she looks at something, that's actually one thing we absolutely have to take. We have to take a stack of things to deal with that. Yeah. No, but we play games like, you know, you look at someone's number plate and say it's MSB, and my son came out immediately with "Mum smells bad," so that's not my most popular game.
But I
think, did you know, here's a fascinating fact that came out from a Europcar survey, in the East Midlands, 68% of people take tea bags with them. Now, the national average is 55% that take their tea bag.
I mean, I could understand if it was slightly further north and it was Yorkshire tea. Maybe there's a line for that. Although I have seen Yorkshire tea in, you know, gradually colonised areas of Lincolnshire, and that's another story entirely. But yeah, is it a case of, well, it's the one indisputable contribution to civilisation that, with respect to British tourists, wherever they go, they need to have their own tea with them?
Well, once you know what you are, who you are, once you're having a cup of tea, it just sorts your head out. I am one of the people that can't live without my own tea bags. I found it very hard when I did I'm a Celebrity to get me out of here, because we weren't allowed tea. So what we'd do, we'd boil water and have them in our little tin cups, and all of us would pretend we're drinking tea, but it was just hot water. There's something so soothing about having a cup of tea, and the first thing you want to do when you arrive at a destination is have a cup of tea, right?
See, personally, I'd like to explore the psychology of the Welsh people actually wanting to take baked beans with them.
A third of Welsh people take baked beans on holiday. A third, that's a lot.
That's a lot of flatulence, potentially.
Well, they can fly home by themselves with no aircraft.
Precisely. As a northeastern lad, I can understand biscuits, because I can. That was fair enough from that perspective. Were you surprised by any of the sort of additional lines that we're working through? I mean, clearly some of the things are fairly obvious. You don't want to travel without your credit card. Usually you'd have a good book to read as well, or presumably you'd carry a whole stack of books with your Kindle device or equivalent.
I was surprised that 34% of people said that their smartphones was the one item they couldn't travel without. I find time away from my phone a holiday in itself. Even if I just leave it in my kitchen and go out to the shops, I feel a sweet freedom that we don't often feel these days. So that was surprising. But then I guess, you know, people rely on it for their navigation now, don't they? We've lost the art of getting lost. Do you remember back in the day where it was really normal to stop strangers to get directions?
Well, a major confession, Shappy, I still do that. I still actually occasionally wind the window down, possibly electronically, and occasionally sort of say, could you tell me I'm in the right direction for so-and-so, so-and-so? And after the sort of shock that they don't see a satellite navigation in the car, they say, oh, right, well, so it is an interesting line of that. So maybe I'm just flying the flag for that, or maybe I'm just outdated.
I think it's nice. I think it was one of the few times where we used to talk to strangers. It was one when we asked for directions, and another time is when you'd give them your camera and say, would you mind taking a photo of us?
There you go. With selfie sticks, even that has kind of gone to one side, really. But again, that's another issue. In terms of British folk in general and taking their home comforts with them, is it a lack of trust that kind of is maintained that we think, well, if we go to France or if we go to Moscow, they probably just don't have the right kind of water?
Yeah, perhaps that is. I think if you're taking bottles of water away with you, then perhaps holidays abroad aren't for you anyway. I think people just like to have one foot at home. I think they want to enjoy new surroundings and explore unfamiliar territory, but still feel that they have those things that make them who they are. And like I say, like the only time I've been without anything that defines me, whether it's people or whether it's tea bags, was when I was on I'm a Celebrity, and it is very discombobulating. Who am I without tea? Who am I without my favourite brand of biscuits? I don't know.
Oh, Shappy, you're more than just your favourite brand of biscuits. I'll say that right now. The nation's sort of shouting it. The staycation, it's something which has become a portmanteau word that's been used more and more, and clearly with economies and uncertainties and various other factors. Is it becoming more popular to actually say, well, OK, we don't really know a great deal about parts of Lincolnshire or parts of the northeast or parts of the southeast or the southwest, so let's actually explore at home for a change?
I'm very much into that. We do that with my children now. We'll just go exploring. And we did when we were kids. My dad had this thing where he'd go, right, we're going to go to five places that begin with B for our holidays. And we'd go on these mad car trips.
Birmingham. Brighton, Brentford.
We went to Brighton, Bath, Birmingham and Blackpool.
Oh.
And stopped off somewhere else that I can't remember. But we were just planning, and that was just like my dad sort of, you know, just being a bit creative.
Could have been Bagshot, I suppose.
Maybe it was Bagshot. Maybe. Yeah. Well, who could forget a holiday in Bagshot?
I feel there's a novel just waiting to be written from that point of view. I mean, surely it's got to be.
We'll always have Bagshot. Yes, I might write that.
That has got to be the sequel to Nino is Not Okay. I mean, it's a line from that. In terms of your good self, Shappy, what are your own personal three items that you basically feel? I mean, we've mentioned tea bags. Is that in there in terms of the top three that you actually need?
Tea bags is in there because even if you're staying at a homestay, Airbnb or wherever else, you're not sure if they will have your Earl Grey. I need Earl Grey. I need Earl Grey tea. And
Would that be tea Earl Grey hot, as in the Jean-Luc Picard notion of tea Earl Grey hot?
Yeah. I mean, tea's always hot. I was very shocked in America where they thought tea would come any other way. Wet wipes.
Yeah.
I think
anyone
with children understands the necessity for wet wipes.
Yes.
And, of course, a good book, which with small children doesn't get read.
Feed the mind.
Well, yeah. I mean, I always take a very ambitious amount of books away with me. But by the time the children have like run me ragged, I fall asleep at the same time as them. So if I'm lucky to read 10 pages when I'm away these days, it's a win.
You can always play them back the tales of England's trials and tribulations and triumphs, hopefully, with respect to the World Cup this year. That's a way forward, you know.
I hope so, yeah.
Yes, indeed. Shappy, where can people go to for further information about what we've been chatting about today?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can look at everything about the survey on europecard.co.uk, and there's some surprising and quite fun statistics on that.
Well, it's astounding. But as ever, it's been a sheer delight sharing some airtime with your good self. Two final questions. They're the kind of customer satisfaction ones. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning, Shappy Kosandi?
I've had a great time chatting with you, yes.
Well, there we go then. I take it we can prevail upon you to connect with us again in the not too distant future. You will return.
Okay, thank you.
Liberation, sons and daughters, the bush is hot, but in-
Samsung phone, which is still just a phone. It's a mobile phone, and it's not quite the brick-shaped size that mobile phones used to be, but I don't want to get rid of it somehow. Maybe I'm one of those tech hoarders. Apparently Britain is becoming a nation of tech hoarders, with a quarter of the population still hanging on to technology that's 20 years old or even older. So as we progress through the 21st century, is this sensible? Is this appropriate? Maybe we should consider using smart meters to actually ensure that life is made easier. And who better to actually talk about this than two awesome individuals. First of all, somebody I'd like to describe in many ways as Renaissance woman, TV presenter, general all-round wonderful soul, Philippa Forrester. How are you, Philippa?
I'm really good, thank you.
And the equally wonderful Chief Executive Officer of Aon, that would be Michael Lewis. How are you, Michael?
I'm very well, thank you. Excellent. Good morning.
Philippa, if we come to you first, this particular survey that suggests that we like to hang on to our technology, we don't want to junk it and so on. Were you surprised by any of the findings here?
Yes, especially the one that men are more likely to hoard than women, because that makes me laugh, because that's exactly what is happening in our house to old tech. And it's usually sentimental reasons. So over 1 in 10 men still owning a typewriter. Seriously, what are you ever going to do with that? And why are you hanging on to it?
You've got to have some use for the Tippex.
And it's, you know, a lot of it is about familiarity. You know, what we're finding when we're asking people questions about why they hoard tech and why they are not moving on. It's a lot of it's just familiarity. So,
well, just as one heart tends to sink when you actually see new updates being installed and so on, because you think that's going to end in tears and so on, there is perhaps this conservatism, this reluctance to maybe embrace the future. And I'm speaking as somebody, obviously, 20th century, the future was just around the corner, and I would expect by now we would have all been riding around in silver suits and rocket ships and so on.
Yeah, but you can take a photo on your phone.
Exactly.
And share it with a friend. I mean, I can FaceTime. I live in America sometimes. I can FaceTime my mum and be in the kitchen having a cup of tea with her. You know, that is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And we do like new technology, and we do embrace it. And we asked, well, what are the reasons that you do embrace new technology? Well, to make my life easier, 38% of people said that. Mm. To be more energy efficient and to save money. And then you put two and two together and you think, well, why haven't you got a smart meter then? Because that ticks all three boxes.
Seamless links, Philippa, as we knew it would be, to the line that by 2020, the government intends for everyone in Great Britain to have been offered the switch from old style gas and electricity meters to more advanced smart meters. So, Michael, from your own perspective, is that a good thing, or is it a case of, no, we'd prefer people not to have smart meters so we can actually charge them whatever we want?
No, absolutely not. We're absolutely committed to offering all of our customers a smart meter by 2020. We've already got 1.1 million smart meters installed across the country, and we're pressing hard to ramp up that installation through to 2020, because for us, we see this as an unmitigated benefit for customers. As Philip has already said, you know, we can get much more transparency around our bills, understand historical consumption patterns, and understand current consumption, and we give it you in pounds and pence with a smart meter, not just in boring old kilowatt hours. And of course, we get the basics right. We don't have any more estimated bills. We don't have any more reading of bills and possibly getting the numbers wrong and then all the hassle of correcting it afterwards. We get those basics right, you get transparency, and that enables customers to really take control of their own energy consumption, and that's what this is all about.
And is it a way of saving, obviously, time, energy and money? I mean, is that virtuous circle, if you like, really part of
all of the above?
Right.
All of the above. All of those things. It saves time, it makes life easier, cuts out the hassle, makes you more energy efficient, and ultimately saves money. So, as I said, there's absolutely no downside in having a smart meter installed. It's all good news.
Philippa, do you ever have any scepticism about the ultimate smart home of the future, where effectively probably it talks to you, it understands you, it orders things in, it does all kinds of other elements, other sort of technologies that are being in place now, which part of me thinks, well, that could be potentially very Orwellian. I mean, if people can hack into our other accounts, they could surely hack into our homes as well.
Well, I can tell you that the toaster on Tomorrow's World that we featured, that was meant to put a forecast of the weather symbol on your toast, was not going to be part of our future home.
Right.
But things like the fridge that tells you when you need some more milk and stuff. Yeah, I can see it coming. It's all coming. But the thing is with technology, there's almost like an evolutionary system at work, a natural selection system. What is really useful to us and what is really not? And we all have limited time. As I say, we have this familiarity thing. We like using things, and we've seen that in the research. We like using things that we're familiar with. So that makes us a little bit resistant. Half of the people we questioned said new technology makes them feel nervous. But if the benefits of moving into new technology really do outweigh the negatives, then there's no reason not to. And so, you know, those people that wanted to make their life easier, wanted to be more efficient, wanted to save money, well, then smart meters are the way to go. And I think we're all hearing about smart meters. We're kind of aware that something's going on with smart meters. But unless you know, in these busy times, you actually focus on it and work out, well, what is it? And you can go to the eonenergy.com/smart and just watch a little video, and that will tell you all about it. Do I need that? Do I want that in my life? Well, of course you do, because it's really simple. So if you look at it every day, get into the habit of as you leave the house, have a look. You can even see if you've left your hair straighteners on.
Interesting, Philippa. I've never really had that concentration of my own perspective.
But I knew you wouldn't.
It's an interesting perspective to put to the listener. Michael, from the point of view of a public relations aspect, really, it's nudge theory, isn't it? Because clearly you want to shift people's habits. But as Philip has just been saying, getting them to think about why they should do that, having a cost-benefit routine, that's really the essential part of why we're shifting people into hopefully what is a better world for them.
Absolutely. And this is the transparency aspect of a smart meter. With your in-home display, you get real-time information. And as you say, that nudges people's behaviour, because they can see, oh, wow, why is my consumption suddenly much higher? And it may be you've left your hair straighteners on. It may be something else. It may be that old fridge in your garage, the way you kept it when you upgraded to a new fridge. And those old fridges are highly energy inefficient. And you'll see it straight away on a smart meter. And as you say, it will nudge people into changing their behaviour over time.
And Michael, I've got to ask you the question, have you ever considered having one of those toasters which actually gives you the weather forecast in your home to actually say, yeah, that's what we need. We need that in every branch of Aon as well.
No, I'm afraid I'm a hoarder as well, and I've still got an old conventional toaster, but maybe sometime in the future.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Philippa, you've already mentioned the place to go to find out further information. Can you just remind our listener once again where it is?
eonenergy.com/smart.
Superb. And we've got our final two consumer-based questions to actually ask both of you at this particular stage. Have you both had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you guys?
Yes, very
perfect.
Good.
That's good. So I take it we can prevail upon you to join us again in the not too distant future and keep us appraised of all the magical things that Aon and other things are happening.
Love to.
Absolutely.
This is Phil Lairness, Chilpack Hollywood Hour co-host, filmmaker, and Los Angeles correspondent, congratulating you for tuning into the Midweek Drive on Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk. Well done.
just an illusion caused by the world spinning.
We've talked about travel, we've talked about transport, we've talked about a variety of other bits and pieces. Of course, we've talked about the holidays. But it seems that when it comes to driving, one in five drivers actually avoid driving in the heat wave so that they don't have to stop. This is in terms of van drivers in particular, because it may well be they're under too much pressure to actually stay hydrated in hot weather, which is carrying risks for all of us. Now, to address some of the important elements relating to this particular survey, that, as we just said, reveals that one in five of the United Kingdom's van drivers are avoiding drinking water. Who better than the National Hydration Council's very own Joanna Hignett? How are you, Joanna?
Hello, I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. And I trust you've got a bottle of water to hand as
I
well.
I do, of
good.
Course.
Because hydration, it is, I mean, we forget we are roughly, I think, 80, 90% water. We're made up of water. If we don't keep our fluids sorted through, then we're heading for problems.
That's absolutely right. Our water levels in our body are a little bit lower than that, but most of our body is made up of water, and it's absolutely critical for all the functions that go on in our body, our digestion, our blood, our general health, etc. And the research we've got today from Mercedes-Benz vans, as you said, say one in five drink less than they should. And in actual fact, one in 20 drive distracted. And this is a key thing about hydration. Being properly hydrated is really important for alertness and concentration. So when our hydration levels drop, we become a bit lethargic, a bit tired, and our concentration levels fall. So really important for all of us, but particularly people driving on the road, van drivers. Mercedes is looking out for the drivers, owners and operators of vans in giving this information out today.
Which is critical. I mean, we've just returned from the Great Yorkshire Show, and just that's on foot going around the showground. You find you need to have regular water breaks. So if you're in charge of a vehicle as well, you could well become a hazard. You could be a liability not only to yourself but to other drivers as well.
That's right. It's really critical. So the best way to hydrate is water, whether it's bottled or tap. It's the healthiest way to hydrate. It's easy to carry water in a van during the day, and my advice is to sip little and often throughout the day. Not to drink the whole lot in one go, because that will go through your body quite quickly, but if you sip little and often throughout the day, that will help keep your hydration levels up.
I was disappointed to find that one in four of those surveyed relied solely on caffeine to get through the day. That's not going to be good for anybody, really. It's going to make you hyper, and presumably, rather like putting sugared water into a top quality engine, you're going to have problems.
Yeah, caffeine has some benefits in terms of alertness, etc. But particularly, I think, caffeinated beverages are typically hot drinks, and we wouldn't recommend those while you're driving. Water is a really easy way. It's no sugar, no calories. A bottle of water, either a bottle of bottled water, spring or mineral water, or a refillable bottle with tap water in it. Sipping little and often is going to keep your hydration levels up. We recommend about 1.5 to 2 litres of fluid a day. And it's easy to measure that if you've got a bottle that you're topping up. Typically, the ones we buy are about 0.5 litre, and you can measure your own refillable bottle if that's the way that you take your water. So make sure that you're having 2, 3, 4 of those a day. And given the weather we've had recently, it's more important than ever that we consume enough water.
Healthy kidneys are also vital for the whole human experience to be functioning properly. And one of the ways to actually work through that, including obviously hydration, is to ensure that you have regular toilet breaks and so on. There is this sense, and I was staggered to find that 1 in 10 of drivers surveyed suggested that in many cases they actually relieve themselves whilst actually travelling in order to actually avoid having to stop and potentially miss targets. That's again something where you just say it's not worth it.
I absolutely agree with you. And about a third of people are saying that it's too awkward to ask customers to use their toilet facilities. Well, that's a real shame, really, because as we know, for our general health and our kidney health, hydration is really critical. So I'd love today that companies who take deliveries, etc., actually think about offering a van driver a glass of water, to use the facilities, etc., while they do their drop. It doesn't take long. And building this into the day is really critical. And it's great that Mercedes-Benz vans are encouraging that today, and encouraging people to actively think about hydration whilst they're working during their working day.
Is it a case, Joanna, of having to change and adjust our mindset? I mean, I know that certainly the ubiquitous white van man, and gender specific on that basis, has had a fairly negative reputation over the years. And you know, something like this, it might well be something a case of, well, their hydration levels are low.
Yeah, I think it is a chance for us to change our mindset. And I think the key thing is to think that our health is really important and comes before all else. And so long-term health can be affected if our hydration levels aren't correct. So it's really simple, really. Choose water. Carry a bottle of water with you. In this heat, chill it before you leave the house. Put it in the fridge the night before. Have a cool bag, etc. If it's a bottle that you're refilling, top it up during the day to keep your hydration levels going. But it's a simple thing. Just be prepared and take a bottle of water with you.
Joanna, from the National Hydration Council, I think you've said everything that needs to be said, apart from one final critical thing. Where can people go to find out further information about what we've been discussing today?
There's lots more information about the research on the Mercedes-Benz Vans website, which is mbvans.co.uk. And for information about hydration and health, you can check the naturalhydrationcouncil.org.uk website.
Joanna Hignett from the Natural Hydration Council. We salute you. Keep drinking the water.
Thank you.
You're a rich girl and you're gone too far, 'cause you know it don't matter anyway. You can rely on the old man's money. You can rely on the old man's money. It's a bitch girl, but it's gone too far, 'cause you know it don't matter anyway. Say money, money won't get you too far, get you too far.
We've heard about trolley rage, we've heard about all sorts of other rages, but Costa del rage is one of those other issues which clearly we need to step away from, particularly when recent research has revealed that holidays are not as harmonious and tranquil as they're supposed to be if you're a British couple, especially when we've got the World Cup tensions around as well. And now to address some of the challenges relating to why many folk feel after the holiday they need another holiday just to actually recover from that, we're delighted to welcome ace psychologist extraordinaire, the fabulous Dr. Becky Spellman. How are you, Becky?
I'm good. How are you, Alex?
Very good indeed. And travel expert Paul Nelson. How are you, Paul?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Becky, let's come to you first. Why is it that there is this pressure to enjoy your holidays? And if you're not enjoying your holidays, you can have all manner of issues, particularly if you're travelling as a family and you've got arguments beginning to manifest themselves. So it becomes more an endurance test rather than a vacation.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, the research was absolutely outstanding. So World Travel Market discovered that 34% of people in Yorkshire were actually having arguments on holiday. Now, it is not all doom and gloom. It was a bit more positive than the national average, which was half of couples having arguments on holidays. But it's still a lot of people. And I was thinking about the reasons for this. And a number of things that I came up with were that people don't like change. Change is difficult for people. There is an awful lot of things to focus on. So checking in on time, making sure you have all of your baggage. There's a lot of multitasking, which us humans are not very good at these days with this world of multiple screens. I think that our ability to focus is inhibited and nowhere near what it used to be. And also for couples, because it only happens once a year often that they go on holiday, this is bringing about new challenges which they're not used to facing. They don't have practice in facing, and therefore it does cause stress, which leads to arguments.
We were talking recently to some of our students who are over in KDU Penang in Malaysia, and sharing the fact that even in Malaysia there are heaps of World Cup supporting folk and variety of things happening from that perspective. This whole notion of the World Cup as the backdrop to holidays and so on, is that something which adds to the challenges, Becky?
Yeah, it is. It really does add to the challenge, because often it means that the couple have two very different ideas in mind, and holidays do get delayed when there is a World Cup. They get pushed back, ignored, neglected and not prioritised, which creates a lot of World Cup widows.
Paul, were you surprised by the research? Was it something which you said, yeah, well, we kind of knew that, but we just got to work it through the 21st century? What sort of things came out from yourself?
I wasn't surprised at all, to be honest. The first holiday I went on with my wife, we had a big argument at the airport and we didn't talk to each other for the whole plane journey. So I think it's what happens, isn't it? People get stressed. You kind of feel like you've worked all year for a holiday. You want to enjoy yourself. And then you get there and it's almost that pressure to enjoy yourself, and it just leads to tension.
Clearly, Becky's the right person to actually give you advice, Paul, because I mean, that's the sort of classic line of that. But I mean, is that a kind of typical scenario, Becky, that actually, you know, couples can go with the best of intentions and actually there's a falling out? You think, oh, no, we're losing this.
Yeah, it's not what we have in our mind when we think of holiday. We think of the sun and relaxing and doing nothing. And then we completely forget about the getting there part and all of the challenges that come into play. So it is something that couples need to really be aware of and need to plan for, because it's far too frequent and far too easy for things to go wrong with couples. And it can really ruin a holiday from the get-go if the arguments kick in early on. So a couple of tips would be to actually start increasing positive behaviours in the relationship. So then there's a knock-on effect. If you're really positive and pleasant and do nice things for your partner, they respond and feel better, but also start doing nice things back. But also, I think it's good to share thoughts and feelings about any concerns before you even go, and anticipate the challenge of it all. This is going to be difficult. Your holiday is not necessarily just going to be a holiday. It's something that will actually bring challenges for the relationship and obstacles.
Paul, would that have helped your challenge a few years ago? And as a case of, yes, I'll put that into practice and all will be well.
I guess I should know better. You know, working for World Travel Market as I do and having been in the travel industry for so many years, I should have realised that, we needed to be nicer to each other. I think it was an early start, and sometimes, you know, you just take things slightly the wrong way. So, you know, as always in any marriage, I'll take the blame for it, and we move on.
And will you be following, or are you following, the World Cup yourself in the household?
Well, again, that's an argument. I was just talking to Becky about it, actually. My wife had a go at me the other day for watching too many games, and I actually
said only 64.
Well,
oh, yeah, really? It's not too many.
So far, there's been 32 games in the World Cup, and I've watched two, which were both England games.
Well,
so I actually think I've been quite good.
I mean, I know lots of people who are actually sort of setting their scene to actually watch all 64, even the ones that occur simultaneously. So it's a different line of time. Becky, from your own point of view, are you a secret World Cup football following fan? Is it a case of, yes, I have total empathy with this, I would say no, I give this advice.
personally, in my relationship, I did something very empathic and I watched one game because it was his country. I felt it would increase positive behaviour in my own relationship and positive emotions in my relationship.
Can we ask which game it was?
It was Poland. Unfortunately, they lost.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever. We just have to carry through on that basis. How can people find out further information about dealing with travel rage and indeed just, again, getting used to hopefully sort of addressing these issues that we've been speaking about today?
If they go along to the World Travel Market website, which is WTM.com.
Makes perfect sense. And don't worry, there's always the next European Championships for Poland. I'm sure, Becky, things will work out okay from that in the end. I mean, the halcyon days of Kazimierz Dana and the 1970s, they might seem a long way away again, but things come round. Look at England. It's been fabulous connecting with your good selves today. Two final questions for both Paul and Becky. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
Absolutely, Alex. Yeah.
Very good.
We haven't fallen out, so that's the important thing. I wanted to work on that basis as a start. So can we look forward to featuring you again in the not-too-distant future? Will you both kindly return?
I'd love to.
Definitely. Very much so.
To Bombay, a travelling circus came. They brought an intelligent elephant, and Nelly was her name. One dark night, she slipped her iron chain, and off she ran to Hindustan and was never seen again. Nelly the elephant packed her trunk and said goodbye to the circus. Off she ran with a chompity chomp, 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 chomp. Now Nelly the elephant packed her trunk and tumbled up in the jungle. Off she ran with a chompity chomp, chomp. Night by night, she danced to the circus band. When Nelly was leading the big parade, she looked so proud and grand. No more tricks for Nelly to perform. They taught her how to take a bow, and she took the crowd by storm.
Jedi program, which is part of Change for Life, launched today. Really an opportunity not only to actually get in touch with the real force, but also to improve lifestyles and indeed fitness levels phenomenally throughout the country. And to talk about this, who better than a dynamic individual who is basically just awesome in everything she does, ace GP and author. It's the fabulous Dr. Ellie Cannon. How are you, Ellie?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very good indeed, Ellie. Now, let's talk a little bit about this particular activity which launched today. It's a connection between Public Health England and the Disney Corporation, tying in with respect to Star Wars and ensuring that children will make use of that enthusiasm to train like a Jedi.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this comes from the fact that we know that
children between the age of 5 and 15 are just not getting the activity levels that they need. So children of that age need 60 minutes a day of moderate to vigorous activity. And the whole idea of the Train Like a Jedi program is to have 10-minute videos where the kids learn strength and stamina and agility, and they're moving around, and to be inspired by these characters from Star Wars, inspired to train like a Jedi, to get moving.
So looking at the overall line that's coming together, this has obviously got a very serious underpinning, because we're constantly being fed the line that our children are not doing sufficient physical activity. You can't all be like Yoda. You need to actually do some activity as well to actually get proactive, to ensure that, you know, health is the result.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are so many health benefits from being active. You know, we know this, and particularly for children, it's about improving bone and heart health, building social skills. We mustn't forget all those emotional advantages from exercise for children, teamwork, self-confidence, that sort of mental well-being. And as you say, being inspired by a Jedi, being inspired by characters, is actually, we know that really, really works for children. I mean, this is the fifth year that Public Health England and Disney UK have partnered. And, you know, for example, last year, it got 2 million children to be active. So we know that this type of thing really gets kids on the move.
In terms of the actual numbers, we're looking on average for children to take part in about 60 minutes of exercise per day. Can that be broken down into 6 10-minute bursts?
Absolutely, it can be broken down. I mean, I think once kids see these Train Like a Jedi videos, they'll actually want to be doing lots and lots of them, and probably easily meet 60 minutes, to be honest, probably be doing it all around the house all day with their parents, hopefully. But yes, it can be done in 10-minute bursts. That's the idea. We do these sort of short videos, and they can do those, walking to school, all the sort of activity people do with their families, anything just to build up those levels of activity.
And which Jedi character would you like to be, Ellie, in terms of the Star Wars character? Where would you actually sort of go through if given the choice? And you can actually say, today, Dr. Ellie Cannon, I will be...
Well, you know, I'm a child of the 70s, so it would have to be Luke. I mean, who else would you want to be other than Luke Skywalker?
Going to learn the ways of the Force and become a Jedi like his parents, or at least his father. and let's not talk about the family issues that they've got in the Skywalker household, because
we'd
be here all day. We'd have to bring in a psychologist indeed, and all sorts of things. How can people find out more information about this wonderful connection between Disney, Star Wars, and, of course, Change for Life? Where's the best place to go?
So simply by searching Change for Life online, and you can find the Train Like a Jedi videos there.
Absolutely perfect. Ellie, as we knew it would be, many thanks indeed. Take care, and hopefully we'll speak again very soon. May the Force be with you.
And you too.
birth of an accidental hipster by the Monkees. Okay, roll of honour time. Time to thank contributors to the programme today for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. That'd be Gabriella Peralta, Ian Lennox, Dr. Linda Shaw, our students, of course, from KDU and Penang University, Corinne Sweet, Shappy Corsandi, Philippa Forrester, Michael Lewis, Joanna Hignett, Joe Wodzak, Dr. Ellie Cannon, Becky Spellman, and Paul Nelson. And thank you, dear listener, for being part of the whole sequence. Don't forget, great stuff coming up as far as Siren's concerned for the rest of the day. Especially around about 5 through 7. It's Drive Time on Thursday with, I think, Chris Clarkson's back in the chair for that, which is great news. And then just after Drive Time on Thursday, we have a special from the Great Yorkshire Show from the Sound and Country Vision team, who will be reporting with live inserts from a whole variety of things over the last few days that's been taking place in the country's biggest agricultural event, even bigger than Lincolnshire Show. I know, it's astounding. That's it from the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for this July day. Enjoy the weather, and we'll catch up with you again, hopefully, Midweek Drive next week, and Midweek Drive Morning Edition on the Thursday. That's Wednesday and Thursday. Happy trails, keep on keeping on, and be happy.